I'm Liz Hirschnoff-Tolley, and welcome to Capital Coffee Connection. What we are going to be talking about is the heart and the humanity of our leaders in our country. We are not going to talk about politics or policy. We are really going to focus on who they are as people, where they come from, and what makes them tick. Because I think that at this point, we have really to focus on what brings us together versus what is making us feel apart. And one of the things that I've been fascinated by lately is the idea of the human genome, where 99.6% of 8 billion people on this planet are the same. What separates us is only 0.4%. And if you think about it, what is that 0.4% that makes all of us different? And how can we actually celebrate that 0.4% and bring us together and actually learn from each other and do it in a form that makes us better than actually pulls us apart? So that is really the purpose of this podcast. Mike Levin, who is a congressperson from California's 49th District, I know spends a lot of time in Washington, D.C., but what I know about him is that he makes sure that every weekend he gets home to San Juan Capistrano to be with his wife, Chrissy, and his two big children. I knew them. I met them the first time when they were little kids, but I've watched them grow, and now they're pretty big kids. But I understand that it's really important. So I want to welcome you with a cup of coffee.
Thank you, Liz.
And we both have cappuccinos with oat milk. And when did you start drinking oat milk?
The secret's revealed. The secret's
revealed. When did you start drinking oat milk?
Probably 5-6 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How long ago since you've had actual cow milk?
Probably when I finished my son's cereal the other day.
Okay, so you haven't quite gone off.
No. But I try. I try. I'm like a failing vegetarian, right?
Okay. Failing.
My plant score is hopefully getting better.
We call those people kind of picketarians.
Picketarians.
Yeah.
Flexitarians.
Flexitarians. They're all
exactly,
good words.
Exactly.
Well, thank you and welcome.
Thank you.
And so today we're not going to talk about politics and policy. People can look that up. But I really want people to get to know who you are. I know you as a very kind, thoughtful person.
Thank you.
And also somebody that really cares about everything that you put your heart into. So we're going to back up. And I really want to hear a little bit about what it was like to grow up in Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
And what it was like to go to school there. And a little bit about your family life growing up.
So I actually spent the first 8 years of my life in Long Beach. And then in 1986, my parents decided to move to Orange County, South Orange County.
Right.
Back then it was El Toro, right by the Marine base. Now it's Lake Forest today. And that was for my mom to be closer to her sister, my aunt. And it was great. Growing up there was great. I went to local public schools, Saddleback Valley Unified Schools. And it really was a wonderful place to grow up. When I was in eighth grade, my dad decided to take a job in Santa Monica. And so we wound up moving back. Both my parents are from LA originally. So we moved back to West LA and went to Loyola High School. And it was a big culture shock for me because I had been at an all, you know, big public school, 1,500 people per class, like big school
for
junior high school. And then I wound up going to an all-boys Jesuit Catholic college prep high school, and it was a wonderful experience. And I give all the credit in the world to the Jesuits. And having the last name Levin in a Catholic school was interesting. But I was raised with a Catholic mom and a Jewish dad, which just makes me an open-minded person, I guess. But then I married a Presbyterian wife, so we go to an Episcopal church. So if you can figure it out,
I think that's modern families. I think that is part
of
modern families.
That's right. That's right.
Now, tell me a little, because I understand that you have grandparents or grandmother that came from Mexico.
Yeah.
And you had a grandfather that served in World War II.
Yep.
Tell me how that fits into who you are today.
Oh, it's huge. I think we're all a product of our experiences, and our family history and legacy is so important, how it shapes us and what we think about the world and what we think about policy and everything else. And so on the one side, my mom's parents actually came from Mexico. My grandpa was 12 years old.
Wow.
My grandma was 5 years old. They went through El Paso, Texas. Grandpa from Culiacan, Sinaloa, Mexico. Grandma from Durango. And when they got to the United States, they really didn't have any money. They didn't speak English. They didn't have any, you know, formal education or anything like that.
Right.
They just worked incredibly hard. And my grandpa pretty much sold whatever he could get his hands on.
Mm-hmm.
So they made their way west. He ultimately met my grandma, married my grandma. They went to Arizona, lived in Arizona for a time, then made their way to LA. And my grandpa became a distributor for Wurlitzer jukeboxes.
Wow.
This is back some...
Wait, could you tell people what jukeboxes are?
Well, exactly.
Because people out there might be going, what's a jukebox?
My kids hardly even know what a Wurlitzer jukebox is, but through a very fortuitous meeting, he wound up as the Western distributor for Wurlitzer. And he grew that business with his two brothers, all, you know, from Mexico, immigrants from Mexico. And he started investing in real estate on the side and ultimately was able to do really well and sent all five of his daughters, including my mom, to college. All five of the daughters, despite the fact that he hadn't gone and even graduated high school. So I think he'd be pretty amazed that his youngest grandson is now in the U.S. House of Representatives.
Yeah.
And on the other side of the family, my grandfather, Eastern European descent, born in Chicago and wound up serving in World War II, fighting, you know, tyranny, fascism, Nazi Germany. And what always struck me about my grandpa's story is that here he was a tail gunner in World War II, and he came back from the war. And as so many people did, he wanted to start a small business, first in Chicago, and then they moved to sunnier Los Angeles in around, I think, 1948. And when they started the business in L.A., they had called it, it was an interior business, so carpet, drapery, upholstery, things like that. They called it Levin Interiors and didn't think much of it. But even in Los Angeles in the late 40s, early 50s, anti-Semitism was very prevalent. And so they found they couldn't really operate a business with the name Levin in the business. So my grandpa had to come up with something, and they changed the name to Dean Interiors after James Dean, even though my grandpa looked nothing
like James Dean
at all.
Sounded good, but it's an interesting, we talk about like how things haven't changed sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's a good reminder that there were difficult times in the past and not that long ago.
Not that long ago, in LA. Our backyard.
Yeah.
And the fact that he had served in the war and couldn't use his own name in business after serving our country never sat well with me, still doesn't sit well with me, but he was tremendous advocate for public service. And that was really where I got my initial instinct of trying to serve something greater than your own self-interest was from him.
That's nice. And did he give you words of advice? What was his, what about, he obviously was a good model, but did he have certain things that he would say that meant something to you till this day?
Well, he talked a lot about the importance of service, the importance of, you know, standing up for our military, and also the need to acknowledge those who protest in freedom of speech, freedom of expression. And I remember before he passed away, it was right around the time of the Iraq War. So he died in 2005. So I remember seeing Code Pink, if you remember the protesters, and asking him what he thought of that. And his response to me was, I fought so that people could be protesting. And so
that
was
freedom,
for that
ability
freedom.
To have a voice.
Exactly right. So he was really well ahead of his time. And I think he understood that, you know, why we have freedom in this country is not necessarily so we can all believe the exact same thing or, you know, support the same ideology, but rather so we can have that freedom, that independence of thought. He was a committed Democrat, make no mistake, but he taught me a lot. And I know he'd be very proud to see what wound up happening after he'd passed away. Unfortunately, wasn't able to see my running or my serving or anything like that.
I do believe they
were
watching.
I hope so. I hope so. But my mom, who's a great artist, so my mom became a really outstanding artist, went to Art Center College of Design, became the first female toy designer at Mattel Toys, was hired by the handlers who started Mattel. And so she worked there many, many years. When she retired, she started to paint. And so one of the first things she painted for me in my office is this great painting of my grandpa in his full, you know, get up with his, he looked like Cary Grant, kind of.
Beautiful.
And he's, you know, my grandpa's over my shoulder all the time, literally when I'm in DC in our office, and just meant a tremendous amount.
I love that. Backing up a second, what was your first job?
Oh my goodness. Well, my dad was a hospital administrator. So when I was really young, I wound up as a medical records gopher or organizer.
Filing papers.
My first political job was in 1999 and in 2000. So the Democratic National Convention was in LA. And I was up in the Bay Area going to school at that time. And a congresswoman named Ellen Tauscher needed a driver. And this is back, thank God this is back before Uber and Lyft existed. Otherwise, I wouldn't have gotten the gig. But all the way back then, I was paid $1,000, which was real. That was good money.
Over what period of time?
For a week to drive Congresswoman Tauscher around L.A. And that's what I did that week. It was just an eye-opening,
wonderful. Greatest opportunity, huh?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And I got to shadow Ellen everywhere that she went. She was so incredibly kind to me to let me do that. And so I got to see kind of through her eyes mm-hmm. what a Democratic convention looked like. And between that and my experience in student government, I was just hooked. And so I knew I wanted to be involved in Democratic politics. And, you know, Ellen passed away a couple of years ago, but she got to see me at least run and win and was a huge supporter of our initial campaign.
Listen, I think that's the part of this, which is the legacy lives on.
Yeah.
And people plant seeds and they don't necessarily get to see the tree grow, but they know that it will provide shade and oxygen for the next generations. And that's what really truly great leaders, no matter what field, offer to the next generations. Talk about the next generation.
Yep.
So I said this in the beginning, you got to fly a lot. I bet you have a lot of miles and I bet they really like you on some of these airlines. But What is your choice? Because when you decided that you were going to be working in D.C., you knew that your family was staying in Southern California.
Yeah.
And you made a choice that you wanted to be home. So give us a little brief idea of like where you are in terms of like your thought of the importance of family, the importance of being there on the weekends with Chrissy and the kids, and maybe tell us a little bit about what you do on the weekends.
So when I decided to explore running, to seriously explore running, one of the real important things was that my wife, who is spectacular, she's absolutely amazing and has a great professional career and is the primary breadwinner in our family.
Yeah.
So when I started talking about this, it was very important that I wasn't going to do anything that was going to jeopardize or derail her professional career. And she works in real estate and finance. And so it was very clear that her moving to DC was simply not an option should we win. And so I knew we wanted to keep the kids in Southern California. And so, you know, a lot of us do this.
Yeah.
A lot of my California colleagues do this. And actually Pete Aguilar gave me great advice about what to do on these flights because you've got about 10 hours a week. So basically a third of the time, catch up on email, all the different emails that you get. A third of the time, read something that you otherwise don't have time to read.
Right.
Could be a book, could be, you know, some sort of white paper, whatever you don't have time to read otherwise. And then a third of the time, veg out, either watch a movie or go to sleep.
But that's great advice.
Great
by the
advice.
Way, for anybody that has to travel that much,
totally.
Because you need to have a little bit of time for yourself, downtime. The phone doesn't ring.
Correct.
And you need to find out how you can regenerate and re-nourish.
I don't mind that, by the way.
Yeah.
So the actual physical flying isn't the problem. It's being away from Chrissy and our kids. Our kids are now 11 and 9, and I know these are some of the most formative years of their life, and it breaks my heart that I can't be there all the time for them. And my parents were very much there for me all the time.
Right.
And I think that was a great contributor to, you know, whatever success I've been able to enjoy was the fact that they were there. Also, I was an only child, and I always knew and I try to instill the same in my kids. I knew that my mom believed in me to be able to achieve anything.
Right.
When I was elected to the House of Representatives, my parents were incredibly proud of me, but they will tell you that they weren't particularly surprised that it happened. They necessarily didn't expect it to happen at that time, you know, 2018, but maybe someday.
Right.
Something like that. And you just never know.
Yeah.
I think life is all about opportunities presenting themselves, but being prepared. So preparation plus opportunity, little luck thrown in, and that's usually how success comes about.
And so what do you do with the kids? And are they involved in sports? And I'm assuming that you're involved with them, whatever, and driving them to and from because that's your time to be together.
They are in so many activities, Liz. You know, when I was in grade school and when I had the summer, my summer activity was my mom would open the front door and say, okay, go play and we'll see you later.
Yeah, be home at 6, dinner.
Exactly.
That was mine.
Exactly. And, you know, now we have a spreadsheet with all their camps and activities and all
I think
these
most people
things.
In America can relate no matter what and party, where they live.
Again.
The spreadsheet.
Well.
And by the way, I love that both parents are doing the work. And that I just want to go back and just say one thing. Like the fact that you honor your wife and her career, understanding how important it is really something that means a lot to me because I have seen over the time where more and more men really do respect their women's roles, their wives' roles, and the women's role. And it's a partnership. And I think that is one of the secrets to a successful relationship, where both sides respect each other's needs, but they come together to be able to build this family.
It's the single most important thing to me. And I went to Washington very cognizant of the fact that Congress has a way of dividing marriages, of you know, not being very kind to marriages. And so I was very adamant that that not be the case for me. We just celebrated our 12th wedding anniversary, but she's the love of my life and puts up with this crazy schedule.
Yeah.
So I'm gone roughly half the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, in DC about 130 days of the year, and then doing other things, whether it's a congressional delegation here or there, or you know, the fundraising aspect of it. We're gone a lot.
Right. But you make up with the quality of the time.
Yeah. So every member is a little different about this, but what works for us is every Saturday, I give to the campaign or to the official side to do whatever events there are that need to be done. Every Sunday, however, off limits. That's our time as a family. So when you talked about the 5:30 dinner, that resonated with me.
Yeah.
Getting the kids to the dinner table and everybody around the dinner table at 5:30, not easy. Not easy.
But wonderful when you get there.
You got to try.
But wonderful when you get there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What is the hardest part about being a parent?
Oh my goodness. Well, our son is now 11 and I see the teenage years in the near future, and having a role, a responsibility where I have a, you know, on the one hand, I have a team of people and pretty much we're on the same page with, in the sense that, you know, I have objectives, I have requests of them, and they usually will do what I ask them to do.
Yeah.
And when I get home, I can't get my 11-year-old to eat his broccoli or, you know, make his bed or anything. And so that dichotomy is challenging. I was recently talking to our commanding general for Camp Pendleton. So this is a Marine. This is a general. And so he's in charge.
Tough guy.
And very tough guy and a wonderful guy. And but when he tells his Marines what they need to do, they just go do it. And then he goes home and he has teenage kids. They don't do what he says. So
I think a lot of people can relate to that.
It's that dichotomy
yeah.
that I think is most challenging. And the good news, though, is that the kids are wonderful kids. They get along with each other as well.
Yeah.
Maybe 90% of the time, maybe 10% they're, you know, at each other's throats over whatever. But I'm also very, very blessed that my parents are still in good health.
Yeah.
And during the pandemic, we were able to spend a whole lot more time with them. And that has really stuck.
Yeah, that's great. And so what is the favorite sport of your family?
Well, my son, I would say our family is probably baseball, but my son is obsessed with Stephen Curry and also with Mike Trout. And so those are his two favorites. And so he wants to be in the NBA and Major League Baseball. And I tell him that's probably going to be tough.
Yeah, but it's also a good dream when you're 11.
Oh, totally.
And it's something to work for. It's a beautiful
Absolutely.
Dream.
But he's in so many camps, baseball camp, basketball camp. He loves it.
Yeah. And your daughter, what is her passion?
Her big thing is dance right now, dance and gymnastics. And she's watching, you know, all these very competitive competitions and so forth. And she's doing the moves. So she's only 9, but my wife was very much into musical theater and dance and all of that. And so she's very into it too.
I love it.
But she also loves coming to a baseball game with us or going to a basketball game or watching her brother, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And they're both so much more talented than I was at their age. So they're both playing.
Well, that's what we want.
Totally. They're both playing, you know, multiple musical instruments, doing all these different things. They're in a Spanish immersion program at our local, the Capistrano Unified School District has this wonderful dual language immersion. So their Spanish is better at grades 5 and 3 than mine was when I was studying Spanish in college with a native grandmother and a fluent mother speaking to me. Their Spanish is better.
Well, we always want the next generation to be better.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Stronger and more talented, because that's the sign of like actually good parenting. So anyways, okay, now I'm going to switch because I want to like give people an opportunity to get just to know a few fun facts about Mike Levin. Favorite meal?
Oh, geez. Gosh, I got to go with either pizza or something healthy. If health is no issue, I could go pizza. But if health is an issue, then we've got a lot of great options in Southern California. You ever have sweet green?
I like sweet green, so but that's healthy.
It's very healthy. It's great. So if
it's
health,
one of my favorites.
If I want to live, then I'm going to go for vegetables.
Sweet green
is
okay. But
great.
What if you want to clog your arteries? What are you going to eat?
Pizza. It's going to be pizza.
Okay.
Yeah. I hate to admit it.
Okay. And if you had a day off and literally a day off with nobody, just where Mike Levin could do something, what would you pick to be that day's activity?
I'd go to the beach near my house and catch up on reading books that I haven't had time to read.
That's great. Favorite hobby, if you had time? I'm sure you have a little time.
Oh, man. You know, I would try with the time I have to get much better at playing baseball. So I used to play baseball as a kid.
Right.
And now we have the congressional baseball game. And
heard you lost.
I don't like losing
at
anything.
I heard you guys lost.
We got our butts kicked for the third straight year we lost the game. But
who did you lose to? I just want to be clear.
The Republicans.
Okay, just want to make that clear that this is really about that you guys are. But I love that because it says that even though we always hear all the bad stuff, that you're out there still doing good stuff together and having fun.
This is a great game. And we had 26,000 people at the game in Nationals Park in D.C.
Very cool.
Raised money. $2 million was raised for about 40 charities in D.C.
I love it.
It's a great game. All that being said, I don't like to lose at anything. So if I had time, I would, get with a coach and be a better baseball player.
I hear you. Okay, now we're going to switch to this little game. You know the game Kiss, Marry, Kill?
Yeah.
I change it to Kiss, Marry, Trash because I don't believe in killing.
Good.
So I'm going to just give you a few. We'll have fun with it. And if you have any comments as you're doing it.
I hope my wife is going to be okay with this. I hope my wife will be okay with this.
She'll be fine. I've kept this PG. Okay, if you need to relax, Netflix, rate these. Netflix, reading, meditating.
If I need to relax, I would say reading number one.
Okay, so you would marry reading?
I would marry reading.
Who would you kiss?
I would kiss Netflix, and it's not because I'm
anti-meditation.
It's because I don't have the patience. I would just be bored.
Okay. Okay, let's do this one. This is an easy one. Breakfast, lunch, or dinner? How do you rate those?
I'm a big lunch guy.
So you'd marry lunch?
I'd marry lunch. I would, that's tough. I need all three. I know some people are into this intermittent fasting stuff. I need my three meals.
Okay, so
if I had to skip one, I would skip breakfast.
So you could trash breakfast, but you would really still kiss dinner.
Yeah.
Okay.
But preferably,
you like them all.
I like them all.
Okay. Well, that really doesn't work with the game, but I appreciate that. Okay. Seasons: summer, spring, and winter.
Ooh, I'd say spring number one.
Okay.
Summer number two.
Okay.
I'd marry spring. I would kill, or I would
trash.
Winter.
Yeah.
And in D.C., it gets way too cold during the winter.
Yeah. Okay. Movies. Comedy, romantic, or thriller?
My favorite type of movie is documentary, so that's not on your list.
Oh, no.
But I have a personal goal to try to watch every documentary Ken Burns ever made.
Yeah.
And a lot of the others, too. But on those three, I would say comedy would be, I would marry comedy. Got to have some humor in your life.
Yeah.
And then horror and drama?
Horror, romantic and thriller.
Well, if my wife were having anything to do with it, she'd want me watching some romantic stuff.
Yeah.
So I'd have to
kiss that,
and I'd have to do away with the thrillers.
Okay.
And it's probably true anyway.
Yeah. It's a good one. Okay. This is a really challenging one. Types of pasta. Fusilli, because in my family, there's a lot of argument over which pastas are the best.
Yeah.
So your three are fusilli, penne, spaghetti.
Penne, I would marry penne.
Wow, okay.
Because I love penne.
Okay.
A good pesto sauce, whatever.
Yeah.
Spaghetti, I'd have to, have on the menu too.
Okay, so you kiss that one.
And I would have to...
Trash.
I'd have to say goodbye to fusilli.
Okay. Now that makes good sense.
Is that okay?
Those are all really good answers. Yeah. And in my family, the penne wins, except for I'm a spaghetti person, but my kids are penne people.
Hey, if it's pasta, it's good with me.
As long as it's got a good sauce. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I was looking at this quote and I wanted to read it for you. And I think of you as this kind of person. I think you're a very kind person. That's what I've always gotten from you.
I try.
Yeah. And listen, but this was an Abraham Lincoln quote. It said, "Kindness is the only service that will stand the storm of life and not wash out.
Hmm.
It will wear well and will be remembered long after the prism of politeness or the complexion of courtesy has faded away."
Hmm.
And what do you think of that? I mean, that kindness, that is...
I think a lot...
Because I think we miss a lot of that in this world right now.
So we are in a very difficult time, obviously, with regard to polarization and division in the country. And I think a lot about the responsibility that I have, the responsibility that every person in a public role has to try to be a source of bringing people together whenever possible, and to demonstrate some kindness is really important in that regard. I think far too many of my colleagues use the position and see it as a means to their own ends, which typically aren't in line with their constituents. They might want a career, you know, might want to be the next Newsmax host or OAN host or Fox News host, yeah, something like that. And as a result, also the easy way out is to use that influence, that microphone, to gin up resentment or fear or outright hatred for people who are different and or who have different experiences or different values. And on the other hand, I think a lot more responsible way to go about this is to use whatever microphones we all have to try to not just tolerate others, but to appreciate those differences.
To be kind.
To be kind.
Yeah.
And also to your earlier point about how similar we really all are.
Yeah.
I think that it would help a lot of people to get to know folks outside their comfort zone.
And that's what the purpose of this is, you know?
Perfect. And
yeah.
And I think that far too often, as public officials, we are just talking to those who think like us, those who vote like we do. And I think that's a huge mistake. In particularly in a district like mine, it's a very competitive district, I don't have the luxury to only speak to Democrats all the time.
You just need to speak to your neighbors.
I need to speak to my neighbors and recognize that representative is a description, not just a title of a job. So if you really want to be a representative, you better get out there and you better talk to people who are not voting for you.
And represent everybody.
Exactly. I always remind myself that the district has around 760,000 people. I only got 200,000 votes.
Yeah, but you represent all 760,000.
Exactly.
Who is your greatest cheerleader?
My mom.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. No, she has always been there for me and has just been extraordinary to me. And my hope is that I can give back some of that to my kids. My dad's always been there too.
Yeah.
My mom has always been my number one fan.
I love that. I love that. What brings you joy? And what brings you joy? And what do you feel about joy as a word and as a, like, as a verb, as a life, as it is? Because I think that the more we as individuals are joyful, then we spread joy to others. And it's like a wave. It starts out as a small current and it builds into a wave. And it goes back a little bit to the question on kindness, but I really think that we can spread joy. And if we do, it's a gift to others. And it's not always easy in politics, but putting politics aside, putting politics to the side, what gives you joy and what do you think joy represents in our world these days?
Well, I think it's different for different people, right? So what works for me isn't necessarily going to work for you, or as I, you know, have to remind myself, it won't work for my son or my daughter or my wife. But what for me brings me the greatest happiness or contentment is the feeling, and John Wooden, the great basketball coach from UCLA, had the definition of success, the knowledge, and I'm going to butcher the paraphrasing here, but basically the knowledge, the self-awareness that you're doing the best that you're capable of doing.
Right.
And it's that moment of understanding that you gave it your all.
Right.
And that as a result of your contribution, that you did something beyond just yourself.
Right.
And so for me, when I know genuinely that we have done something, whether it's professionally or otherwise, to try to help somebody or to try to lift somebody up or to make a positive contribution, and I feel that we've succeeded in that, that brings me great satisfaction. That's why this job that I have now, for all of its problems, for all of its challenges, for being gone half the time, for having to spend all the time doing all the crazy stuff that we do, putting up with all the personal attacks that we all have to put up with, knowing that there's going to be a ton of people that aren't going to like you, that don't know you. And maybe if they got to know you, they'd like you better, but they're just not going to like you. And, you know, just because of an R or D next to your name. So you put up with all that because you know that at the end of the day, you actually can make a positive change. And I've been at it now for about 5 years, and I've seen the work that our office can do, not just the legislation, although that's important, but the day-to-day impact that we can make on the lives of our constituents in a positive way with this amazing group of people who are all committed to doing something greater than themselves. And so for me, that brings me great joy.
Yeah.
The other thing is that occasional time when I see that my son or daughter picked up on something I may have said, and they're embracing that.
Yeah.
You know, when they demonstrate kindness to one another. Like, for example, my son and daughter went to the mall the other day, and my son actually took his own money and bought a gift for my daughter.
Nice.
And that is not necessarily the norm for my son
right.
to do that. And when that happened, I just felt this overwhelming sense of, you know what, maybe it's all going to work out after all. Just the fact that my kids have a big heart and that they're hopefully emulating the best, mostly of my wife, but hopefully a little bit of me, that gives me great satisfaction, great joy as well.
That's a beautiful answer. So we're going to end there because that's the most perfect ending, which is the family and the joy. And really, I can see from your smile the joy of being a father
Absolutely.
And a husband. And I want to thank you very much. And I want to thank everybody for listening. Hi, it's Liz. Please join me every for coffee to talk about heart and humanity with our elected leaders. Ciao.